The U.S. attorney in Syracuse was apparently willing to send a recommendation to Washington that Robert be charged with a misdemeanor, but Guidoboni heard nothing from prosecutors directly. The Justice Department was maintaining an ominous silence in the matter, placing the case in a tense state of suspended animation. Here was someone who had supposedly committed the computer crime of the decade, and he had yet to be charged with it. Still more ominous for the defense, in the spring of 1989, the case was lifted from the Syracuse prosecutor's hands and given to prosecutors in Washington. The waiting game continued. Beside himself with boredom and loneliness in Maryland, Robert moved to Cambridge and started working at a small software company run by a couple of his old friends from Aiken, then switched to a programming job in Harvard's Classics Department. Robert had yet to utter one word in public about what he had done, about his reasons or his motives, yet in some circles he had acquired folk hero status. One young hacker had Robert's photograph taped to his bedroom wall. Others were choosing RTM as their password. In June, 7 months after the incident, Mark Rash, the Justice Department's young computer crime expert, called Guidoboni to introduce himself and say that the Justice Department planned to indict Robert on one felony count. If Robert agreed to plead guilty, Rash said, the Justice Department would consider granting some concessions on the sentencing. In one last attempt to reconcile the matter outside of court, Guidoboni had a meeting with Edward Dennis, the Assistant Attorney General in charge of the Criminal Division of the Justice Department. But Guidoboni's pitch, that his client had intended no fraud and should be treated lightly, failed to convince the prosecutors. After the meeting with Guidoboni, it still took Dennis some time to make the decision to proceed with the indictment. Robert, who would have pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor, decided he would rather take the case to trial than plead guilty to a felony. The whole family was affected by the long, tense wait. Exhibiting his own strange way of coping, Bob decided to take up a hobby of his daughter Meredith's that he had always found intriguing and signed up for a church tower bell-ringing class in Washington. The class met twice a week and demanded that Bob spend even more time away from home than he already did. It irked Anne, who had quit her job in order to work from home and hold things together. She was particularly edgy, still stinging from what she considered the Justice Department's targeting of her son when there were so many true criminals to worry about. All her children, and Robert in particular, had grown up understanding that you simply don't hurt people. Those who portrayed Robert as a malicious felon didn't understand that it was antithetical to Robert's moral makeup to do anything harmful. For his part, Robert remained quiet, asking his parents for very little. When Anne asked him if he wanted the family to be at the trial, he said there was no need. Anne told him everyone would be there anyway.